Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll capture this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
It's Seth Kaiser time here, because it's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. Maybe, arguably, probably the best time of the week, depending on who you are, I guess. I'm certain that this is Seth's favorite hour of the week, and not even hour, 30 seconds.
Yes, it is. It's easily my favorite time of the week. You know, my children, they wail at the idea of how much more I enjoy spending time with you, Josh. It's my wife has become wild with jealousy. It's a rough thing. The Kaiser household is in shambles. But you and me are solid, so that's what's important.
That is what's important. And there's nothing... I'm glad to hear you say that of the many things less important than this specific radio show, your family. Your family,
sure.
Maybe personal health, well-being.
Right. Well, when you get to my age, you have to prioritize, Josh.
Right.
And that's what I've done. There's Almost Entirely Sports, and then there's everything else.
God, I'm just going to mark that one myself and hope Beards catches it later. So good. So I always love talking about the outside of football things with you, but like today I'm staring at your author page on The Athletic, and I feel like if we don't get into it immediately, we're going to miss like three or four important things.
I've been writing a little bit. You know, there's football again.
We have football.
Football to watch.
I feel so out of my element talking to you about football right out of the gate, but it feels like the thing to do.
I'm perfectly fine with that. It's been so nice having new film to review.
Yes.
I mean, even if it's just the broadcast angle for most snaps, and even if it is just preseason, mm-hmm. and even if the Chiefs played kind of meh, it was still so nice watching new snaps.
We've got three or four things we're going to hone in on specifically here. But first, you just used the I think the right sound, which they played kind of bleh. I think that's the way to describe it. But what was your sort of large-scale takeaway from the game? Not even from necessarily an analytical perspective, even just from an enjoyment or lack thereof. Anything large-scale that you took from it?
Nothing really too large-scale. I think the biggest thing, like watching, and this is me, watching how they lined up and how they ran plays and the lack of genuine audibles and how the defense lined up. This was seriously so much a glorified practice.
Yeah.
This was, I mean, I know Andy Reid commented on that a couple days ago. They were just looking at stuff to see how it looked. And it's just interesting to watch that happen in what looks like a game.
Right, right.
It's frustrating at times because you're just like, why wouldn't you audible out of that? It's like, well, no, they just want to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
They want to see them run it. Overall, it was fun. It was fun watching Mahomes' footwork mm-hmm. and how drastically that's improved.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an overall fun thing. Of course, what always happens to me, at least, and maybe this is other people too, every year, you know, we're just dying for Chiefs news.
Yes.
And then we kind of get like, you know, it's as though we're going through the desert. And then the training camp notes are like those first drops of water
yes.
that managed to keep us alive. And then we get to the first preseason game, and that's like our first real drink of water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're just desperate for it, right? We can't wait for it. We're so excited about it. But it turned, you know, the water really isn't that good of water,
right.
Honestly.
It's like it's warm hose water, but it's a hose.
Yeah, it's warm hose water. So after you've quenched, like after you're no longer dying of thirst,
mm-hmm.
you're kind of just like, I'm ready for the real thing. I'm
yep.
ready for the actual water. And so there's my, I mean, I think we do some sort of analogy every week. So there's your analogy. preseason, I like it. It's the warm hose water. You needed it. It kept you alive.
Yep.
But I am already, you know, it's like, well, now they'll play a whole half. Right. Then after that, it's like, oh, they'll play three whole quarters.
Yep.
And then by the fourth preseason game, no one cares.
Yep, 100%. And I do think that's the way to go about it. I did like, though, the perspective of saying it was a glorified practice, but it looked like it was a game. So I think that gave us some things to worry about. I had this happen, like, in the moment, and then afterwards I was like, oh, yeah, it's the glorified practice. For watching Steven Nelson, especially. Watching Steven Nelson play, like, 5 yards off his receiver on, like, third and two gave me a headache. And, well, it is a glorified – I think it is just figuring out what they're doing. Although – a couple days ago, or I guess it was about a week or two ago, we heard Patrick Mahomes saying that the coaching staff was telling him not to practice bad habits, and I did think about that quote, that maybe Bob Sutton's
right.
practicing Bob that Freudian slip might work. He's practicing Bob habits, which, by the way,
Habits
was my favorite America's Funniest Videos host.
I like that. He's practicing Bob habits. Don't practice like Bob.
He was great. Bob Habits was great in Full House.
The reality of the situation is that whatever reason they had for doing it, they were primarily lined up in press man coverage for most of the game. Mm-hmm. They lined up in off man for some situations, including on a third and short that, because there was some pressure on that snap, had they maybe not been lined up like that, maybe it wouldn't have been a first down.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's just tough to take anything. Like, if you watch, you know, what the Texans were doing on defense, you saw some really basic cover two shells, just some really, like, this is just football 101 stuff.
Yeah.
Like, not really a lot of disguises. And so it's just impossible to take anything away from it. And so I know you practice how you play, but that's more in terms of, you know, individual effort during a play.
Yes.
With regards to schematic stuff, you got to just see what things look like.
Yep.
And so I think that's what they're doing. Now we'll see as the preseason progresses. But it is at least interesting to me because for months now people have, you know, been talking about, oh, we won't have to see someone lining up, you know, 10 yards off the line of scrimmage on third down anymore because some people have a certain opinion of Marcus Peters.
Right.
And so it was kind of hilarious to me that it happened the very first game.
That is pretty funny. That's very good. Okay, so before we get to the actual things you've written about, we have both used the same phrase to describe our feelings about Eric Berry being held out of practice for a good long while, and we may not see him in the preseason. We've both on separate occasions mentioned that we're not worried. I'm normal. I'm not panicking, but I am normal worried at this point. Where are you at with Eric Berry not being on the field for a while?
I'm worried, but I'm like you. I'm not panicking. It is preseason. I'm hoping that this is representative of the idea that they learned something with the Justin Houston injury fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
That they've just learned, okay, when you've got a star on a big contract, you play it safe.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, that's, you know, last year he had some soreness and then he had the other ankle get hurt, and maybe they're just being as safe as humanly possible. That's my hope. That's what Reed seems to be saying. But it still has me a little – it doesn't feel good because, I mean, they have a lot of money tied up in the Berry.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, he blew his Achilles the first year of his new contract, and now it's the second year. And the hope is, okay, well, now he'll be fine. But, you know, you can't help but start thinking things like, what if he's never the same again? Holy crap, they're tied up in that deal through 2020.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean – and so it's easy to start panicking if you really think about, like, the worst-case scenarios here are that they're on the line for, you know, a $14, $15 million a year safety who doesn't play. That's tough.
It is tough.
But at the same time, I can't count out Eric Berry barring his body completely betraying him.
No, for sure. But that, I think that's the thing that you can be a little worried about, and you can play that game a little bit like, man, this just might be a guy who just below the knees just keeps getting demolished. And we don't know that's happening yet, but man, if he had a sore, if it was a knee, which is usually the thing that you know, is the scariest thing for any football player, if it was a knee right now, I'd be like, oh yeah, he'll be fine. Like, he's got a sore knee, whatever, that happens. Literally anything other than the heel or the Achilles, and I've looked through a bunch of articles, I just checked again to make sure I hadn't missed anything, we still haven't heard which heel it is, right?
Right.
So it's either the heel that was sore last camp or it's the heel of the Achilles that he tore.
Right.
Neither one of those are great.
Seen either. I thought when you said articles, I thought you meant like you were looking up on like WebMD or something. I was like, oh, don't do that to yourself, Joshua.
No.
Don't. I've had, and look, I really appreciate everyone who interacts with me on Twitter, mm-hmm. and everyone's so passionate. Mm-hmm. But I've had more people giving me medical diagnoses than, and I'm just like, look, I don't know. And you might not either, all due respect.
No,
but,
we probably
you know,
don't.
I'm not a doctor.
But
yeah.
the
you know, most of us don't.
The heel bone connected to the Achilles bone is a well-known lyric of that kid's song, and I mentioned this on Twitter that most of my medical knowledge comes from either Greek or Roman mythology. I don't remember which one it is, but I know that Achilles was dipped into that magical water by his mother, who held onto him by his heel, and so I know for that reason that the Achilles and the heel are like. If not, I think they're connected. I think the Achilles tendon goes into basically your heel, right?
Yeah.
So it's close.
That would be Greek mythology.
Was it Greek? Okay. I didn't remember which one Achilles was. I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Achilles was a hero of the Greeks.
Okay.
Before we get too far into this, you're going to lose every listener you have if you get me started on Greek mythology.
Do you know a lot about Greek mythology?
I'm a well-rounded man, but yes, Greek mythology happened to be something that I studied for a little while just because it's an interesting topic to me.
Huh.
Yeah. That's why I made the joke about Hercules' death to you.
Right.
Because the way he died in Greek mythology is that his wife, well, not his first wife, it's a long story, she was jealous about something, and she dipped his robe in what she thought was something that would make him love her, but Hera had actually tricked her, and it was like acid, and that's how he died.
I didn't even know that.
That's why I said I don't wear robes because of Hercules. I thought that might not have landed.
No, I figured that it was, I don't know. I didn't dig. I just accepted that you were making a joke about Hercules, and I didn't want to try
Yes, you were very polite about that.
That's fantastic. Okay, so let's talk about the things that you've written about now since we've gotten our dose of the nonsensical, which makes me very happy. I feel like this segment's more well-rounded now. You wrote about Xavier Williams, and I think he and actually the other guy you wrote about that's already up on The Athletic, Tano Passanio, I think those were the only two guys legitimately that I saw on Thursday night and went like, oh, hey, that's nice. Like, not world changing, but like was pleasant in a way that I don't think I was really expecting. What did you see from Xavier Williams first?
Xavier Williams is stout. He is hard to move. I just took a quick look. You know, he obviously only played like 6 or 7 snaps. I mean, it wasn't many. And you can't really gauge a player on that. But the way he handled the box that were sent his way, he's just hard to move.
Yeah.
He's very, very strong. And that's something that you see also when you attend camp. He's just a wide-bodied dude. Mm-hmm. Him and Derek Nnadi, they're just both built like powder kegs. You know, they're just huge, huge guys. And so he did really well at the point of attack. He gave me a lot of hope for what he'll be able to do as a run defender this year. You know, the hope was that Benny Logan would be an upgrade with the run defense last year. And honestly, for me, he was kind of disappointing. Now, I don't think a lot of the defensive failures were on him, but he wasn't as strong at the point of attack against individual blockers or double teams as I thought he'd be, or as he was in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And so that was a little bit disappointing. Whereas Williams, when he got matched up one-on-one, on the play Chris Jones ended up getting the 2-yard loss. Mm-hmm. That happened in large part because Williams just grabbed, I think it was the center who was in front of him. I believe he was lined up as a zero tech. He basically just grabbed him by the shoulders and just walked him backward into where the runner was going, like 3 full yards. And that's not easy to do.
No.
You know, sometimes go onto a football field and walk 3 yards.
Right.
Like, that's a long ways to push a 300-plus-pound man. And he just moved him right in the lane, so then the runner had to cut back, and Chris Jones cleaned up because he made a nice move on his own. There was also on the third and short stuff, Chris Jones again. By the way, Chris Jones looks good.
Yes, he does.
Like, really good, which is nice. On that third down stuff, you know, Chris Jones made a great play to get into the backfield quickly. Mm-hmm. However, because of the angle he was at, he wasn't able to quite bring the runner down. He was able to redirect him. But there was still a hole for the runner to go at, except Williams basically couldn't be moved by two guys and flowed to where the ball was going and basically created a wall made out of his offensive linemen.
Yep.
that the runner ran into. And even with the runner's momentum, they still couldn't move him. Yep. And so it was that was what happened on that third and short stuff, was Williams just could not be moved. And so I was really encouraged watching that. He seemed to bring a certain hard-nosedness, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term,
yeah.
that I think the defense didn't really have last year. I was hoping Benny Logan would bring it, and he didn't. So I'm really happy with the early results and him as a nose tackle. I was really looking forward to watching Derek Nnadi as well,
mm-hmm.
Because he looked super stout in practice too, but he unfortunately didn't play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we're going to see the same thing from Derek Nnadi, or something similar at least, whenever we do get to see him in an actual game situation. And I feel really good about how the middle of that defensive line has changed this offseason. In some ways, yes. it might be the biggest positional improvement off the top of my head. Like, the inside linebacker spot also, I think, is going that direction. But, man, I having Williams and Nnadi as your one and two in the middle there, I think, is going to be really hard to stop. But to that point, one of the things that I've heard some people expressing some concern about was the run stopping that didn't happen in the game, or the defensive toughness not showing up. And as much as even just like reacting that way to a quarter of preseason football made me roll my eyes, I did even more so realizing that Reggie Ragland and Anthony Hitchens didn't play, and Eric Berry didn't play, and Daniel Sorensen won't be playing for a while, but he wasn't playing either. But especially those inside linebackers and Eric Berry, at this point, barring mm-hmm. something unforeseen with Berry, we're expecting those guys out there week one. Don't let me put words in your mouth, but I'm expecting that you're not currently worried about the middle of that defense, right?
No, I'm not. The reality is they had two backup inside linebackers playing starting roles.
Yeah.
And if you look at the one big gain that the Texans had on the ground mm-hmm. against the actual – and even, by the way, even the second drive, they were rotating in subs there too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Chris Jones kept playing, but Xavier Williams barely played the second drive. Mm-hmm. Alan Bailey barely played the second drive. So, I mean, they were rotating guys out already on the defense. So that's worth noting. And then, again, if you look at the one big run that they did have, there were some failures there. Alan Bailey didn't have a great snap. But the reality is, with the superior play by the inside linebacker, that play doesn't go anywhere. Terrence Smith hesitated, didn't hit the hole fast enough, and so a blocker was able to reach him.
Mm-hmm.
If that's Hitchens or Ragland, I'm almost certain that's a stuff or a short game, because that hole gets filled.
Yeah.
And so I'm just not too stressed about it at this point. We'll see what happens when we've got everyone on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the overall results of preseason games aren't what matters. What matters is watching the individuals and see how they fare in their individual matchups.
And you took a look at Tano Passanio with that perspective. I think these edge positions are going to be really interesting. Because I also saw D. Ford get pretty well plowed over on a run, like one of the first couple snaps of the game, and that gave me flashbacks. But Tano Passanio and then also Breland Speaks, who we might touch on in this discussion, are going to be really important this year to what the Chiefs are able to do. What did you see from Passanio?
So it's a really interesting article if you take a look at it, and I feel like I'm okay saying that because it's only partly mine.
Okay.
So I don't know if you got a chance to see, so what Nate Taylor, who's just been killing it, he's mm-hmm. just been doing such a great job,
mm-hmm.
what he did is he actually went and he interviewed Passanio once my article was already up,
mm-hmm.
and he tailored his questions around what I had written about with regards to pass rush moves, with regards to learning from Houston,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With regards to the speed of the game, with regards to what he's learned. And so then what Nate did is he went in and he added those quotes
mm-hmm.
to fit them in with the article. And it's really cool because so basically what happens is you get me writing about it, and then you get Passanio talking about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool thing. What I saw was a guy who looks a lot more comfortable in space. I don't think he's ever going to be as fluid as Justin Houston or Von Miller or one of those guys.
Sure.
But he looked way more comfortable in space. He didn't look like a defensive end playing linebacker,
mm-hmm.
or even almost an interior lineman mm-hmm. playing linebacker.
Yeah.
He looked a lot more comfortable. His explosion looked a little bit better. He just moved better. And there's just no other way to describe it. He looked more fluid out there. He also demonstrated a few more pass rushing moves. Not a ton. That's an area he still needs to develop.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, he just basically kind of pushed and kind of pulled until he got by, or he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now he was actually executing an actual push-pull move, an actual mm-hmm. rip move, a little inside juke, a few other things that he tried out
yep.
that you can see his comfort level rising. And he had some success with them. Mm-hmm. The Texans were getting rid of the ball very quickly. He actually hit the quarterback three different times. And the Chiefs struggled to hit the quarterback last year a lot of the time. And so that was really encouraging. Didn't get a chance to see a ton in run defense. They only ran him a couple of snaps. I don't think his recognition is where it needs to be when he's in pursuit and the play, and he's not play side. And unfortunately, that's like the one thing that Dee Ford is good at in run defense is recognition and pursuit.
Right.
But as far as
he gets pursued right over, but yes.
When he's in pursuit, he does a good job.
Fine,
I swear.
Fine.
But he's not really bad.
Whenever the play goes away from him, he's better at being a run defender. Fantastic. I feel so much better, Seth. Thank you.
All you need to do is hope that they don't run right at him. Yeah. I don't know why they would, because if you don't run right at Ford, you're running right at Houston, and that's stupid.
Yeah, so, the worst.
Yeah. And so with passing, they only had one play where they really ran right at him, and he set the edge very strong, and he held up very strong, which makes sense because, I mean, he's 6'7", 285 or so.
Yeah.
He's just a big boy on the outside. He's probably got 25 pounds on Dee Ford, and he looks like it too, so to speak. They're just big boys on the outside. And so that's encouraging. He looked better. Again, small sample size, although he played a little more. One thing that's interesting to him, he looks the same whether he's playing against third stringers or first stringers.
So
he doesn't really pop. Yeah, he doesn't really pop against third stringers the way you'd like to see him. And that's the way a lot of starters do. You put him out there with third stringers, you can tell who the starters are.
Right.
But he it's interesting that his play level doesn't drop against higher quality competition. And so he held his own. He played pretty well, I thought. And it's enough to make me say, you know, they obviously have Ford out there as the starter. I know they like Dee Ford.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Dee Ford should be uncomfortable, but I don't think he should be comfortable.
I think
if he continues to be a liability against the run.
Yeah, when I think I don't think he could have been comfortable after the draft this year because they spent their first pick this year on a pass rusher and their first non-Patrick Mahomes pick last year on a pass rusher. The plan to move around Dee Ford has been in the works for a while. And so you say that they like Dee Ford. I think they like Dee Ford compared to Frank Zombo whenever that option's there. But I don't think they like him as a long-term option, especially whenever Speaks and Passanier are going to be way better financial values for the next several years. And I think Ford's gone after this year. I'd be stunned if they brought him back, unless his market is just empty, and then maybe. But and it would be, you know, as a third down, you know, situational pass rusher type of guy. But what I'm curious about is, and this might not be something that you can really break down completely, since I don't think you've looked much at Breeland Speaks since the draft film review, but he probably hasn't changed that much since then, is how do you feel about Passanier versus Speaks right now? Who is a more versatile passer?
Sure.
Your stuff about Passanier being able to do different things is really encouraging. How do those guys compare to each other? Where would you see their roles being for this season specifically?
Well, the jury's obviously out because we've only seen Speaks in limited action. In one preseason game, he actually had a couple of nice rushes. I was curious how he would look coming around the edge. He had one really good one that, again, the ball came out too quickly. I mean, when the ball comes out in 2 seconds or less, that's that
right,
for the most part. And so I liked little bits of what I saw from him, but I'm going to need to see a lot more. Right now, if I had to choose a guy, I'd pick Passanier. Part of that is just because I'm more comfortable with him, but I think he looked like the more consistent rusher at this point.
Yeah.
That said, again, you know, Speaks is newer to the league, and so he's got a better chance at improving quickly than Passanier does at this point.
Sure.
And so we'll just have to see. But I saw just enough flashes from him to think, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Well, I'm good with that. For me, the thing that I think is interesting is that I've found myself kind of in a similar place, just basically reading what you've said about Breeland Speaks and then watching Passanier on Thursday night and in the reviews and everything. I feel like Passanier right now would have the leg up, but the Chiefs have talked about those pass rushers in a way where even guys like Brett Veach talk about Breeland Speaks as being a guy who's closer to being ready now. And for me, it seems like Speaks certainly is coming into the league as a more ready pass rusher than Passanier was last year, but it also seems to me like Passanier has a higher ceiling at this point, And maybe that's just because whenever I look at him, I see, like, Thor. Or, like, just, like, some sort of actual superhero with unstoppable potential. And as if Breland Speaks is, you know, just a fat old dude. But I don't know. I digress.
Well, no, everyone looks like a fat old dude next to Tano Passanio.
That's kind of how I feel,
He's one of the most unbelievably chiseled human beings I've ever seen. And so
kind of
you obviously, it's easy to look at him and see a higher ceiling. Mm-hmm. And plus, I do think he's more athletic than Speaks. Mm-hmm. And so I just think time will tell. I do think Speaks looked a little better out there than I expected. But to be fair, I did not have high expectations for him at all.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens with him. But I was encouraged by what I saw in Passanio. And he's someone I'm going to keep a really close eye on in the second game. Enough to where I might write on him 2 weeks in a row just because
sure.
And that's part of the problem with writing a film review on a guy 1 week is, you know, besides the quarterback, are you really going to write on someone every single week?
Right.
I don't know. But he and Speaks, I mean, they are a wildly important development for this defense because they need another pass rusher. It cannot be just Jones and Houston, no matter how good a year those two have.
So you can read Seth's Tano Passanio film review, his Xavier Williams film review, both of those up on The Athletic right now. The next thing coming out, Seth, is about the Chiefs' offensive line. I've been seeing your tweets about it and everything, and I've seen many times the clip of Patrick Mahomes stepping up too far on that play where he was sacked. So I know that that's not all on the offensive line, if any on the offensive line, honestly. Mahomes just went too far up. But I have also said on this show and now others over on the 810 side of things and all that the one thing that did give me a slight uptick in concern was the offensive line. I know you are here to calm all of our fears. Please do so.
I am. And so I've got an article that is right on the verge here where I basically looked at every single play by the starting unit. And the reason for that is so that I could look at the play and then tell you whether there was an offensive line failure or not. The reality is, in 8 passing plays, there were 2 plays where there was an offensive line failure, and neither of them killed the play. So the very first play of the game, obviously that's what everyone remembers, right?
Yeah.
Because Cam Irving got whooped, and Eric Fisher got whooped.
Eric Fisher was on the ground.
And Mahomes took a big hit.
Yes, he did.
And so, but he did complete the pass.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the play itself was a good one by Mahomes. Real, real encouraging thing to see. Eyes up, delivers the throw, took a hit, didn't even seem to faze him. He actually said he was glad to get hit.
Right.
And he's, you know, here's the thing with Mahomes. He's a big dude. He's a thick guy.
Yeah.
I don't worry too much about his health.
Thick with 2 C's.
Yeah. So, So that play, in my opinion, and this is just a theory I have, that play colored people's perception of the rest of the game. There was only one other play where I charted an offensive line failure, and that was Mitch Schwartz losing to a spin move on the play where Mahomes missed Kelsey down the left side.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. That move took a minute to develop. Mahomes did have enough time to throw the ball. He did have a guy in his face, and he sailed the pass. So that's partly on Mahomes, you know, and that's the nature of the beast with those intermediate throws where you're trying to fit it into a tight window.
Right.
You're going to see more of those this year, which means you're going to see more incomplete passes
because
those are harder throws. Just the reward is much greater. So anyway, but that was it. And I'm not concerned about Mitch Schwartz losing to a good spin move because Mitch Schwartz was an all-pro last year. Mm-hmm. We know he can play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that play doesn't cause me any concern. So then, I mean, so really you have 1 play out of 8 that might be concerning. And that just is not that many.
Sure.
And so what ended up happening is I think because people saw Mahomes, quote-unquote, under pressure, they assume, well, the offensive line is playing bad. But like you talked about, the play where he took a sack, what happened there was Demetrius Harris lost immediately on the outside.
Okay.
Now, I think, based on rewatching it a few times, I think he thought Jace Amaro was going to chip his edge rusher, because he gave up the outside edge.
Right.
And so the guy basically started sprinting at Mahomes at the snap. So Mahomes did a good job. He kept his eyes up, and he moved up. But rather than just controlling the size of his steps, which is something that's just work.
Right.
That's just practice. Controlling the size of his steps, he took 3 big steps forward rather than just 1 big step or a couple of short steps. If you watch Tom Brady move around the pocket, you'll notice he doesn't take giant steps anywhere. It's generally speaking shorter steps. And that's why a guy who is a statue is so hard to bring down,
right,
because he doesn't go too far. So Mahomes got right up to the line of scrimmage, and what that did was it changed the passing lane or the pass rush lane for the guy working against Mitch Schwartz. Schwartz had him stonewalled.
Right.
But when he moved up to where he was right next to Schwartz, without Schwartz realizing what was happening, he created an easy passing lane for the guy to just detach and move right towards Mahomes. Here's the thing, if you want to take something encouraging from that play,
mm-hmm,
Mahomes still had a split second there, and you saw him think about it.
Yep.
He was going to still try to fire that ball to Watkins,
yep,
deep over the middle of the field, despite the fact that there was a defender about to hit his arm.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he pulled the ball down and lived to fight another day. That's encouraging to me.
Yeah.
I think that's a point of emphasis for them.
I think it is.
So that's not on the offensive line. That's not an offensive line issue. And another one, you know, the final drive they had, you know, all people see is a failed screen and, oh, man, Mahomes is under pressure again. Look at all those guys. Well, if you watch the play, and I actually made a video clip of every play except, like, two of them, because two of them you didn't even need them.
Mm-hmm.
And on this play, what you see is the edge rusher destroyed that play by anticipating a screen. He didn't even rush.
Mm-hmm.
He started to, then he read what Hunt was doing and correctly just stopped rushing and stood next to Kareem Hunt. So when Mahomes looks at Hunt, he can't throw it. He cannot make the screen. And by their design, screen plays bring all the pass rushers at the quarterback. And so when the quarterback doesn't release the ball, which Mahomes made the right call not releasing the ball right away,
right,
well, then suddenly you've got four guys right in your face, and that's what happened there. I think people saw these plays, you know, the Demetrius Harrison, Jason Morrow play, the failed screen play, and said, holy smokes, the offensive line is getting killed. When you really watch it, they were by and large doing their job.
Right.
Now, we'll see. I'm a little concerned, especially without LDT, about the offensive line. But the reality is what happened that game doesn't really match the narrative that has come forth from it.
All right, Seth, we got to let you go. I want to talk more about Patrick Mahomes. I want to talk more about the offensive line. I want to talk more about everything. But we will have to wait until this time next week. You can read all that on The Athletic. Go to The Athletic right now. Go do it. Go spend your money there. We've already told you what's coming out next. We talked about all of it. We can't sell The Athletic better than we already have. Go already. Seth, as always, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on a Tuesday.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.